Oh, thank you. It's good to see everybody. Nice to be healthy again. Good morning, and the scripture today, there's three of them. First one is Genesis 1, 24 through 30. I have to take this down because it fogs up my glasses. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures of every kind, cattle and creeping things, and wild animals of the earth of every kind." And it was so. God made the wild animals of the earth of every kind, and the cattle of every kind, and everything that creeps upon the ground of every kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the wild animals of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So God created humankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth." God said, "See, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. Then from Exodus 20, 1 through 3, "Then God spoke all these words, 'I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me.'" And from Galatians 5, 13 through 15, "For you were called to freedom, brothers and sisters, and only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love become slaves to one another. For the whole law is summed up in a single commandment, 'You shall love your neighbor as yourself.' If, however, you bite and devour one another, take care that you are not consumed by one another."
Our granddaughter, Devin, who's a junior at UCI now, at age 16 was hired as a beach tower lifeguard by Huntington Beach. Pretty amazing thing to beat out about 80 guys and some others and become a lifeguard there. I was pretty impressed with that, but I want her to be impressed with me too. So I said, "Devin, if you need any advice or any help about lifeguarding down there from the tower in Huntington Beach where surf meets the sand, just let me know, because when I was your age, I was a lifeguard at Mayo Plunge in Compton, in the city park." And she got the irony of that and said, "Old granddad, you know." But I said, "Yeah, all that you need to know about lifeguarding was what I did there. No running on the deck, no swimming in the deep end unless you pass the test, and no pinching. So that's all you need to be a lifeguard." In fact, when the session started and all these recreation kids would just come pouring in, we just told them, the only three rules. First of all, have a great time here, but three rules: no running on the deck, no going in the deep end unless you pass the test, and don't be hassling each other and dunking each other, okay? So those were the things. Otherwise, just have a great time in the water. And that's basically what I want to say this morning. But I'm going to talk for 20 more minutes. There was a piece in the LA Times, I'm sure many of you noticed it, it probably was on internet and TV news as well, about a Los Angeles Fire Department captain who refuses to be vaccinated and thinks it's unfair that if he has to make that choice of not being vaccinated, that there's a good chance he'll lose his job. And I don't blame him for not wanting to lose that. I think it pays $250,000 a year and has a schedule that allows him to live in Texas. But he did not like that, the possibility of that choice. And so he released a video that has been widely seen, and he ranted in it. At least my opinion is ranting. This isn't about vaccinated versus unvaccinated. This is about freedom. He went on to say, this is tyranny. I am so hopping mad right now, you have no idea, my head could pop. And I read that and I wanted to cry out to this fellow wherever he was or go knock on his door and say, haven't you ever heard the words of Edmund Burke, the British Member of Parliament in 1774, who said liberty must be limited in order to enjoy it. And the founders of our own country took that into their wisdom when they created a constitution. There were other responses that were in the newspaper you may have read. I don't have time for them, but a couple of them I just thought were cogent. This one, raging against the city vaccination requirement that he calls tyranny, the fire captain said, I'm so hopping mad my head could pop. Well, I certainly hope that doesn't happen, since depending on where he is, he might not get medical attention with hospitals being filled with unvaccinated COVID-19 patients. I want to read some others, but I won't. Okay. But there were responses to this, and I'm sure others who said amen to what he said. But this morning, what I would like to do is address the whole issue from the basis of our faith, from our faith perspective. The philosopher, theologian, inspired writer of Genesis, read a bit to us this morning, says that basically that even if we humans were to come from an idyllic origin, like is described there, and released to live free in the world with everything satisfied, we could and probably would still mess it up. That we could and probably would give in to greed. Not all the time, but could happen. That we could and probably would succumb to jealousy and violence. The writer knew that humanity will yield up the good, the bad, the beautiful, and the ugly. And that's why I believe in original sin. Not as a result of someone eating an apple in the Garden of Eden, but proved by centuries of human history. None of us is exempt from doing the wrong thing when we know what is right. And in our groups, we're even more susceptible to that tendency. And in the letter of Galatians, Paul's great call to freedom, he says, for Christ's sake, you've been called to freedom. Submit not to a yoke of bondage, anything that will enslave you. But be careful in your freedom that you don't use it as an excuse and begin to, for your own greed, and begin to tear each other apart. That what you read, Judy. Don't use your freedom for your own self-indulgence. The founders of our nation, at first, were really impressed with the Greek and Roman concepts of virtue. I read about this recently, and George Washington especially said, if we become a free country from the European powers, there's virtue in the American people, and we will just do the right thing and make sure everybody gets taken care of. But by the time we had been a nation for a few years, Washington, Jefferson, and others began to realize that that won't cut it. We will tear each other up. And so they came up with a Bill of Rights and other laws, all designed not to take away our liberty, but to limit our liberty when it needs to be in order to preserve it. Now, this morning, I want to illustrate this, that we've been given lots of liberty, but we want to make sure we preserve it. And that I want to illustrate through the Ten Commandments of the Bible. Now, when I mention Ten Commandments, a lot of people have this kind of response that a New Yorker cartoon, which shows Moses talking to the great cloud up here with a tablet in his hand. He says, "Now, how about some affirmations to balance all this negativity?" And I think the reason that people often equate the Ten Commandments with negativism is because they have never really understood their intent and the context out of which they came. A lot of folks see the Ten Commandments as repressive, negative, binding, limiting, and insulting, to obstruct our freedom, to hold us back, to keep us from having any fun, to crush our limited, flowering little personalities. So they see it that way because we have never really experienced what it means to be squelched and oppressed. Some of us to a certain degree, but most of us not. Certainly not to the extent of the children of Israel, who had just been freed out of a terrible slavery. And the people who gathered at Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments were on a prison break of hundreds of years, a group that had lived as slaves of the Egyptians for hundreds of years. They and their parents and their grandparents and their great-grandparents suffered intensely in a hopeless situation of cruel bondage. And then, quite without warning and by sheer miracle, this God of creation, Yahweh, came along, turned these people loose, and kept their former oppressors from getting at them. These were the people who were there to receive the commandments. And the one central overwhelming fact of their existence was that they now were free people. And by Yahweh's help, they intended to stay that way. And although unsuspected at the time by them, the Israelites, their God Yahweh intended for them in their freedom not to become oppressors of other people. And so later in Leviticus, we read these amazing words. "When an alien resides with you in the land, you shall not oppress the alien. The alien who resides with you shall be to you as a citizen among you. You shall love the alien as yourself." Freedom for you and for all. This idea of freedom and staying free, allowing others to be free, is the only proper background against which to understand the Ten Commandments. In fact, the stage is actually set in the preamble to the Decalogue, as it's called, Exodus 22, that Judy read to us. "I am Yahweh your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. I brought you out of slavery." Now, if I can be a bit anthropomorphic and a bit melodramatic, here's what it might, we could imagine the conversation. Yahweh is saying, in effect, before handing out the Ten Commandments, "Hey, folks, you are a free people, right? Right. And it took me to get you that way, right? I have rather adequately demonstrated that your freedom is my prime concern, right? And having done what I did, I have proved myself to be the world's leading expert on freedom, right? But then, if God would have said, okay, here are the 10 things I want you to go do now that you're free people. Here are 10 things. That's what you're supposed to occupy your life with. These 10 things." That wouldn't have been freedom. That would have been an unfair limitation to only give them 10 things to do. Instead, the brilliance of the Ten Commandments is this. I have set you free, but some things, God says, can steal away your freedom. So let old Yahweh give you a few helpful hints on how to be free and stay free, okay? You people don't know it, but you stand in danger of losing your new freedom. No, it's not the Egyptians that are going to come and repossess you. I took good care of them. Here's what's threatening your freedom. In the first place, there are a lot of other gods around here who would dearly love to have you sign on with them. They will make you big promises about the freedoms they may have to offer, but be careful. I've already proved that I am the God of freedom, right? And what these gods offer as freedom always turns out to be slavery. That's why they are false gods. Only one God frees people, and the other gods enslave people. That's the difference between the true God and false gods. Therefore, you free people shall have no other gods before me, right? In the second place, there are a lot of so-called free people around you who will make like free and inviting you to join them to set up graven images. They carve figures of animals or of the sun and the moon to use in their worship. But whenever any object commands more attention, more of yourself than it actually deserves, that is slavery. Whether it be an image of the sun and the moon, or whether it be the image of a Ferrari or an infinity pool, it can enslave you. And so, you free people shall not make for yourselves graven images, right? In the third place, in the name of free speech, some would urge you to say my name over and over again in worship or maybe in anger. And either way, you may become enslaved to a ritualistic habit. And before long, my name will have no special significance to you. Your sense of my holiness and love for you will dim. And doubting my concern for you, despair will easily steal away your freedom. So you free people shall not take the name of the Lord in vain. Right? In the fourth place, in the name of freedom, some may urge you to work and toil every single day because that will give you money for more goods and those who you work for to have more money for their goods. But fatigue, heart attack, joylessness, resentment, depression will rob you of any real freedom to enjoy the fruits of your labor. A rhythm of labor and rest will keep you healthier, happier, and freer. So, you free people shall not forget the Sabbath day and will keep it. Right? In the fifth place, you may think that you are so free that you can dump your parents and your grandparents when they are too old to work in the fields. But remember that your children will see this and probably treat you the same way. Then who will be free? You free people then shall honor your father and mother, right? In the sixth place, if all of you think that you are free to go about wreaking vengeance and violence on whomever you wish, you will soon not only to be enslaved yourself to aggression and retaliation as a way of life, you will most likely end up a dead slave yourself. So, you free people shall not kill, right? In the eighth place. In the seventh place. We can't skip this one. There are those who would suggest that freedom means freedom from commitment to marriage and family relationships. But if integrity and fidelity cease, then you will not be free to enjoy relationships of trust and enduring happiness. So you free people shall not commit adultery, right? Right. In the eighth place, your freedom is jeopardized if the so-called freedom of another person lets him think he can help himself to your belongings anytime he wishes, and vice versa. So you free people shall not steal, right? In the ninth place, a person can plunge right back into bondage and despair where his good name and reputation is destroyed by falsehood and slander, and the good reputation of that person may be you. You will not be free to pursue and know the truth if deception and lying are the order of the day. So you free people shall not bear false witness, right? Finally, in the 10th place, I, the God of freedom, want you to be truly free to enjoy all the blessings which are yours. But there are those who would cause you to want what the other guy or gal has, who would try to convince you that you're not okay unless you have a bigger tent, a faster camel, a more cooking spouse. But to occupy your life with hopes and dreams for what others have is to enslave yourself to dismal frustration. And so you free people shall not covet, right? So go out there and have a great life. Just watch out for these areas. They'll get you. And I guess what I'm trying to say and to get across today is that human freedom and spiritual freedom cannot be maintained as freedom without the help of some boundaries. Liberty must be limited in order to enjoy it. Take caution as an individual and as a society that your freedom does not destroy you. With regard to traffic rules, environmental rules, building codes, criminal codes, religious codes, we will differ on exactly what those should be. But the question to ask is, does this rule, this mandate, this law, this requirement, this regulation, is it to facilitate and protect my freedom and the freedom of others? And what this LA Fire Department captain doesn't get, at least in that video, is that humanity is interconnected. This guy is not only connected to his own family and friends, his firefighter mates, he's also connected to the elderly woman that he cradles and carries out of a burning building. We can debate the details, but we cannot denigrate proper limits to freedom that actually protect and enhance and free us to a satisfying existence. Let me try to say it in closing with a little story I wrote. Once there was a father who loved his child very much. The father had grown up in an orphanage located in a congested city where he never experienced the beauty of running free in a meadow field. Later, when this child happened to be about 3 years old, the father and the mother decided to move to the countryside and where their child, they hoped, could be free to run in the grass, free to play in the clear air under sunny sky. But next to the farm they were going to live in was a highway with cars traveling 60 miles an hour. So the father built a fence to keep his child from being squished on the pavement. And the farm had a big, beautiful, but sometimes ferocious 3,000-pound bull. The father built a fence around the bull to keep his child from being trampled or gored. The farm had a deep well that provided delicious water. So the father built a fence around the well because the curious child, he knew, could crawl in and drown. With these dangers set apart, the parents joyously released their child into the wide spaces of their family farm to romp and roam the grass and the flowers, to feed the chickens and the ducks, and to wade in the brook. And both the parents and the child were now truly free, free to enjoy the good life before them. So go and be free, brothers and sisters. Resist any yoke that harms you or others. Embrace, though, the constraints that can preserve the abundant life for you and others that God intends. Liberty, yeah, must be limited if we're to really enjoy it. Just be sure, folks, we're really enjoying it.